Some Juneau homeowners are seeing a huge spike in their fire insurance rates based on new industry estimates for how long it takes firefighters to respond to their homes. Capital City Fire and Rescue Chief Rich Etheridge says the department's not doing anything different, but he says the way insurance companies calculate the distance from your house to the closest fire station recently changed.
Fire departments and communities are rated on their level of fire protection on a scale of 1 through 10. So what they do is they look at the distance your structure is from the fire station and from a fire hydrant, and if it's beyond those distances, because of how quickly fires grow and multiply, that they feel that your house is at a greater risk for much larger losses. So the further away you are, the more your insurance rates go up.
Many insurance companies use the firm Insurance Services Office Incorporated to determine the distance from your home to the closest fire station. Previously, Etheridge says ISO drew circles around a station on a map to determine the distance to nearby properties. But in the last year, he says the firm started using GPS coordinates. For years, he says the Juneau Fire Service area, which includes Douglas Island and everything out to 20 Mile Glacier Highway, received a rating of 4, meaning all properties were within at least 5 air miles of the nearest station.
In past years, the North Douglas area fell within that 5-mile circle of the Glacier Station. It wasn't practical that they would be the ones serving them, but it met their rules. And for Thane, that 5-mile circle was encompassed into the Douglas Fire Station.
According to a quick Google map analysis, Etheridge says CCFR determined that about 150 homes out North Douglas Highway and 46 homes out Thane Road no longer fall within the ISO's 4 rating and are subject to higher rates.
Some folks have said 600, and I've heard a high of $800 a year.
Etheridge says the department has been able to help some homeowners dispute the new rates by proving that they are within 5 miles of a station.
Some of them have been an error to where the insurance company has got them listed at more than 5 miles away when they are actually only 2 or 3 miles away from a station. So some of those errors we're able to help them get corrected.
Etheridge says anyone who thinks their insurance company may have it wrong should contact the department for assistance. The price of Brent crude oil is $113.86 a barrel this morning. West Texas Intermediate crude is at $95.96 a barrel. Gold is up nearly $9 in New York spot market trading, currently at $1,702 an ounce. And silver, currently at $32.64 an ounce. The country is staring down a fiscal crisis in the new year. If Congress fails to act, a combination of more than $1 trillion in federal spending cuts and the expiration of the Bush-era tax cuts will likely send the economy into recession. That combination of tax increases and spending cuts has been dubbed the fiscal cliff, an ominous name for a serious situation. APRN's Peter Granitz explains the sequester, the formal name for the impending spending cuts, in the first of a three-part series.
It goes back to last summer's debate over the debt ceiling. After months of political brinksmanship, Congress agreed to raise the debt limit, the amount of money the government can borrow to stay afloat. But deficit hawks demanded a plan to cut hundreds of billions of dollars from the federal deficit in return. And the way to do that was the Super Committee, a group of 12 lawmakers from the House and Senate who were charged with reducing the federal deficit by $1.5 trillion over a decade.
It was basically set up to fail.
Jason Piquet is research director at the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Piquet says Congress wrote the Budget Control Act, the law that created the supercommittee, with a dangling threat, the sequester. If the supercommittee could not reach an agreement, federal spending would be cut across the board by $1.2 trillion.
They acknowledged the need to come back to this, and so they set this sequester to go off some 400 days in the future. Unfortunately, it didn't force them to reach a deal this past fall, but hopefully now, with the sequester much closer to going off, it can finally force lawmakers into agreement.
Most believe the cuts will cut wide and deep. Government agencies can expect to lose between 8 and 10% of their operating budgets. The Office of Management and Budget must release a plan for what the cuts will look like. And Jason Piquet thinks the White House will up the ante telling Congress, you created this mess, now fix it.
And it's probably going to say, we're not able to make thought-out, well-informed decisions about what programs are working and which ones are not, and cut the ones where we can. It's probably going to tell us all programs across the board, whether or not they're working or whether or not they're failing, are going to be cut by the same percentage.
And that leaves an incredible amount of uncertainty. Businesses that rely on government contracts cannot plan ahead. And states are in the gray, too. Kip Knutson runs Governor Sean Parnell's Washington office. He says state commissioners do not know how much money their agencies can expect.
They have a great deal of unease because we do obviously receive a lot of federal monies in the various state programs. And, you know, for them to run their programs effectively, it's always good for them to have an idea of what's coming down the pike.
And perhaps most important, citizens, everyday people, do not know what to expect. There are exemptions to Medicare, Social Security, and military personnel. But what does it mean for college students with subsidized student loans, or military families who rely on TRICARE for medicine? While there are uncertainties, some things are nearly guaranteed. The Congressional Budget Office warns that the combination of the cuts and tax increases would send the economy back into recession, and it would hurl the unemployment rate back up over 9% by the end of 2013. The cuts may begin to corral the out-of-control debt and deficit, but Jason Paquet says it does not structurally change Social Security, the tax code, and Medicare and Medicaid, the largest drivers of the federal deficit.
At some point, investors say, okay, enough is enough. You've been spending or taxing in a way that's not balancing your budget, and we don't have confidence that you're going to repay us in the future.
And if investors lose confidence in the U.S. economy, interest rates spike, and the fiscal crisis becomes personal.
That makes it harder to take out a loan for a new car. That makes it harder to get an affordable mortgage for a new house. Combined, that really slows down the economy.
And there's a tough irony in that because the deficit increased in part because of the last recession. The government had to spend more on things like unemployment insurance and food stamps. There's an expectation in Washington that Congress will do exactly what it did last year, push the problem further down the line. Senator Lisa Murkowski says Congress could change the effective date of the cuts.
We punt, if you will, and come to an agreement that sequestration doesn't go away, but it's just pushed back an additional 6 months or perhaps an additional year. In other words, the hammer is still there, but we've pulled back a little bit on when that hammer comes down.
There is consensus that action sooner rather than later is better. It's safer to make the cuts on our own terms instead of the demands of creditors. But signs point to Congress holding off, especially with the election just 2 months away. And because of that, over the next 2 days, we'll look at how the sequester could potentially affect military spending in Alaska and the state's oil and gas industry. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Alaska state troopers say a woman was fatally shot by her male hunting partner as they looked for moose near the community of Dot Lake off the Alaska Highway. Man told troopers that Tuesday's shooting with a high-powered hunting rifle was an accident. Neither the man nor the woman was identified yesterday. The man called 911 and responding medics found the woman dead. Troopers say the woman's body has been sent to Anchorage for an autopsy. Troopers are releasing few details. The death remains under investigation. And another moose hunting fatal. Troopers say a 26-year-old Trapper Creek man named Cody Perry died September 1st. Troopers say a hunting companion identified as Kyle Strong accidentally discharged a rifle that he had cleaned into Perry's leg at a cabin off the park's highway. No foul play is suspected in that case.